just got to get that mentality that we got to score every time we're on the field. If we do that, then the sky's the limit for us.
Welcome to the Davenport Cleaners Halftime Show on KSCJ. Here's your host, Brian Vakulskas.
The Iowa Hawkeye and Iowa State Cyclones will meet in Ames for their annual Battle on the Gridiron Saturday, and I'm joined by Dan McCarney, who has perhaps the most valuable insight as anyone into this Cyhawk football series. He was an offensive lineman at Iowa in the early 70s, coached the defensive line there for the first 11 years of Hayden Fry's tenure, and he was the head coach at Iowa State for 12 years, beginning in 1995. But among all that, he was a grad assistant under Iowa head coach Bob Cummings in 1977 when the current Cyhawk series was reborn. Dan, what do you remember about the hype during the weeks and months leading up to that Hawkeye Cyclone meeting in 77 after a 43-year hiatus?
Yeah, Brian, I mean, it was incredible. And I honestly, I know a lot of decades have passed, but I remember it vividly, just like it was last week. The build-up, the anticipation, the excitement, the trash-talking, the woofing, the yelling, the hollering, the signs, it was unbelievable. And as we all can imagine, stop and think, here's these two phenomenal universities in the same state, couple hours apart, and they're not even playing for 43 years, which was ridiculous. I mean, it was just stupid. And finally, thank God we all got together, and the state of Iowa said, you know, let's start playing. But the build-up, the excitement, the anticipation, the game itself, defensive game, 12-10, won by the Hawkeyes that day. But I remember the beginning of it. They introduced the starting lineups on both teams, starting defense from Iowa State, I think it was, the starting offense from Iowa, and then they introduced Bob Cummings, the head coach of the University of Iowa, and the last one to be introduced was Earl Bruce over in front of our bench where they introduced everyone, and they said, and the head coach of Iowa State Cyclones, Earl Bruce, and he's shaking his fist at the whole stadium, at the whole side of the Hawkeye, and the place just exploded. And of course, they came out of the locker room after pregame warm-up with their beat Iowa jerseys on. And the intensity was unbelievable that day. And, of course, the whole nation was watching. It was an ABC national game. And obviously, I was a part-time coach at the time, 1977. Tom Hayes and I both played at Iowa, part-time coaches with Coach Cummings. And to be a part of that and to be on the sidelines and experience that first one is one of those games I'll cherish forever.
Well, the players all seem to say the right things leading up to the series and about its importance, but when you have players on these teams from all over the country, do the kids who didn't grow up in Iowa really buy into all the hype?
Oh, yeah. I think there's, I don't think there's any doubt. And, you know, the bottom line is for the rest of your life when you get to graduating from Iowa State, Iowa, you're going to be a Hawkeye or Cyclone for the rest of your life. And whether you came from New York City or Miami, Florida, or Coralville, Iowa, you were a part of that, and you were a Hawkeye and a Cyclone, you know, during your career and playing in those games. Now, obviously, it's got a lot of meaning to the kids who grew up in the state of Iowa because, you know, a lot of families are pretty united throughout the year, and then it comes to that one day out of 365 days when the Hawks and the Cyclones get together, and many families I found out about and heard about are divided on that day because of their loyalties and their love for those two universities, but it's just a tremendous thing to be a part of. I got to coach in 25 of them, and fortunately now the rest of the country gets to see it from ESPN Game Day, and Fox Television, I think, is doing the game for the rest of the country to be able to watch both games.
Yeah, the ESPN Game Day coming to Ames for the first time. And so what sort of dynamic does that add to the game day preparation for coaches as far as the media responsibilities go to produce that show?
Yeah, I mean, there really isn't much, to be honest with you. I mean, you have the normal things that a head coach, Matt Campbell, Kirk Ferentz, has to do every week, no matter where the game is or what's played. But when they do come in, and I was at Florida when we had game day there with Urban Meyer, you know, it's not like you can put 3 or 4 hours a day aside for media responsibilities. You've got a certain workload that has to be done every day in your preparation for those games. I'm sure Matt and Kirk will be real professional, as they always are, handling media responsibilities, but the most important responsibility is that football team, getting them ready to try to win a football game on Saturday. But it's just great because it's a national treasure, ESPN Game Day. All those guys are involved, and phenomenal that they're coming to Ames, Iowa for the first time.
There's been a lot of talk that you might be the guest picker. Are you?
No, I'm not going to be the guest picker. But ESPN Game Day once a couple of days ago at our home here in Sarasota, Florida. I stumbled and mumbled through that interview, and you know, they'll probably use 30 seconds of it, but they were actually here for 4 hours. And And as you know, it's setting up. It's the ESPN crew. They're first class in everything they do. And then they've got just certain features that they use on game day. And I try not to screw it up too bad.
Well, we've all seen that famous photograph of Hayden Fry and all the assistants from the 80s that you were part of. And you're part of Hayden's coaching tree. You've got your own coaching tree with Chris Ash at Rutgers, Jay Norvell at Nevada, and among others throughout the years. When you were part of Hayden's staff, all those terrific future head coaches on there, what kept everyone together for so long? Because a lot of you could have left right after the 85 Rose Bowl season to be head coaches somewhere else.
Yeah, you know, there's a lot of reasons why we stay together. First of all, if you've never lived in Iowa, you don't really understand it. You don't get it. A lot of people don't really understand. What's so great about Iowa? What's the big deal about Iowa? Well, it's about the people of Iowa that live there, and many of us that grew up. The thing that I always thought was synonymous with the Iowa people was character, work ethic, loyalty, credible people. And I always just loved being a part of that. And growing up, and wherever I lived in America, and I lived in a few places, I was always proud of my Iowa roots. And Coach Fry did a great job. Bump Elliott, as an athletic director, did a great job back then of trying to improve salaries and bonuses and incentives for assistant coaches. Well, it's a different world nowadays, salary-wise, but I still know that there was a loyalty, there was a love, there was a camaraderie that started with Coach Fry, and he wanted to keep us together, although he never wanted to hire guys. He always reminded us, I don't want guys on my staff unless they want to become head coaches someday. And in talking with him just a few weeks ago and seeing him down in Texas a few months ago on his 90th birthday, one of the things he's most proud of, ESPN did a survey, and they found out that the top three guys in the history of college football in our lifetime that have put out the most head coaches. Number three was Bobby Bowden, number two was Paul Bear Bryant, and number one was Hayden Fry. And that's pretty special. And that's one of the things he is really absolutely most proud of in his lifetime.
Chatting with Dan McCarney. Dan, you mentioned the money in coaching. And, you know, I know the assistants, coaches now, the salaries are well into the six figures, maybe even a couple few times over. Back in 1979-80, when you're coaching at Iowa, what kind of paycheck are you bringing home at that time?
Yeah, when Coach Fry interviewed me, you know, I was a part-timer with Coach Cummings, and the whole staff was let go. I was making $12,000 as a part-time coach with Coach Cummings. Coach Fry came in, interviewed all the previous staff. I was really blessed, lucky. He saw things in me I didn't see in myself, kind of like with Kirk Ferentz, because neither one of us probably deserved or had earned the right to be full-time coaches in a Big Ten institution. But he gave us both opportunities. And when he offered me the job initially to be the tight end coach, when he was sitting in Bump Elliott's office offering us all interviews, he offered me the tight end job for $18,000. And I jumped off the couch, and it felt like $180,000. I had no idea he was going to offer me the job. And then Bob Lee left a few months later after spring ball, went back to Texas, and that's when he came to me and said, Mac, you did a really good job with Jim Swift and those tight ends. I'd like to have you take that defensive line over now, work with Coach Brazier on defense, and I'm going to pay you $24,000. So it brings up a point, Brown. I'll be honest with you. We all got into it. I think I'm talking for coaches back in the 50s and 60s and 70s and 80s. We got into it because we wanted to give back to this great game of football. We wanted to try and impact young people's lives, change their lives in many cases. I just hope that nowadays, when all these young guys are growing up and they're seeing those salaries, that it's not the salaries that's the number one motivation. And that's great. I'm glad for all the coaches and the money they're making nowadays. But I hope it's still that they want to give back to the great game of football.
You know, I don't think people who are outside of coaching can really understand this, but when you went from growing up in Iowa City to coaching, they're playing there, coaching there, then you go to Ames and take over as a head coach, people would probably, that would shock the conscience that you could go from supporting University of Iowa to supporting Iowa State and being an Iowa State fan. They don't see it that you can do both things. What does that do to your psyche, or how do you deal with that other than, you know, this is my employer and I love the Cyclones?
Yeah, I mean, I grew up a Hawkeye, obviously, 36 years in Iowa City, played there, coached there. The love of my life in a profession and as a player was the Hawkeyes, and that's all I knew, and that's all I cared about. And from a football playing standpoint, I did sign a conference letter of intent with Iowa State with Johnny Majors and Jackie Sherrill when I came out of City High School in 1971. I came just inches away. I mean, about as close as you can get to signing the national letter of intent. In the end, I decided to stay home in Iowa City. And no regrets, obviously. Even though we didn't have any bowl games or winning seasons when I played, I still am proud of what I gave to Iowa and my teammates and the friends that I made and the experiences I had even as a player at Iowa. But when I got the call, Barry Alvarez came in, grabbed me in the office, said, Gene Smith just got off. I just got off the phone with Gene Smith. I said, what's he want? He said, he wants to talk to you. I said, about what? He said, about the head job at Iowa State. And so long story short, went through the process, didn't know if I was their number one choice or their 50th choice. But in the end, they offered me the job. And, you know, to go be one of only 127 Division I head coaches, which I think there were at that time, and there's 10,000 coaches that go to the National Coaches Convention each year, and go back to my home state and try and resurrect a program that had bottomed out and was winless and had not had much success over 100 years. I wanted to try and do that because as an assistant to Coach Fry, we did that at Iowa. As a defensive coordinator at Wisconsin, we did that and went from 1-10 to 10-1. I wanted to try and bring some success and honor back to Iowa State, and that's why I made that decision. And hopefully most of the people, I'm sure there were plenty of people that thought at the time, what the hell are we bringing a Hawkeye into this place for? But in the end, as you look back on it, hopefully most people were pleased with the effort and the results and a lot of the things that we did to try and upgrade Iowa State football.
Well, there's only so many people that have done this job as a college head football coach at Division I level, and so, you know, you're one of them. Do coaches still seek out your advice about things that come up? Because you can understand this like nobody else.
Yeah, you know, it's one of the great things about being able to have some time on your hands. I don't sit around watching many soap operas nowadays, but I stay on the go. It's not the same when you have your own team, but I'm still connected to many, many coaches across the country that I either coach with, they coach with me, or they coach for me, and coach against me. And so I do get out. I get to go to a lot of places. I was just in Ames. Matt brought me back this past month, spent some time with the Cyclones. Chris Hatch out of Rutgers, I've been out there. Lance Leipold at Buffalo. I was a graduate assistant with us at Wisconsin. We won the Rose Bowl. Tony Strong's right up the road here at South Florida. We won a national championship at South Florida. Dan Mullen in Florida, we won a national championship together in Florida. So I get out and get a chance to go around and see lots and lots of people. Kirk Ferentz has brought me back, not really for advice, but let me talk to the team as an honorary captain. And I just enjoy as a fan now to watch and cheer for these teams. I was in San Antonio for Iowa State's bowl game last year. I was in Tampa for Iowa's bowl game. So just getting the opportunity to be around first-class programs and first-class coaches and cheer like crazy as a fan. I do understand now about this tailgating stuff, and I didn't get to do that for 45 years. We didn't rode the buses to the stadium, but I can sure see how people get hooked on that, the fun and the enjoyment and the fellowship and the excitement out there tailgating before they walk into the stadium.
You know, when I watch the national championship on TV, I always watch the ESPN channel that has the coaches sitting around a round table. It's a couple head coaches and usually some assistants, and they never seem to be very surprised about what happens. They can read how the offense is set up, how the defense is set up, and basically predict about everything that's going to happen. It seems like if it's that easy to do, wouldn't it be that easy on game day? But is there something different about when you're watching that from the booth or from the sideline versus a disinterested person watching on TV that makes it tougher?
Yeah, I mean, there's just so many components and elements and ingredients and those kind of things that go into planning and game day. And you know, you've always got to try and be prepared for the things that could come up in a game, no matter how crazy or wild or things that can come up. You've got to be ready for them. And hopefully if you've covered that, talked about it in a meeting room, walked them through, worked through it out there on the field, but then you got to be ready for, you know, expect the unexpected, because that's what people do. Each week they have time to prepare, and they're going to do a lot of the same things, but then they're always going to do some things that may be different or you haven't had a chance to prepare for. And that's why communication, coach to player, player to coach, player to player, on game day, that's why it's so important. It's one of the most important elements to winning football games, is the ability to communicate on the sidelines, from the press box, in the halftime room, and every chance you get out there on a football field. And the best communicator, teams that communicate and do a great job of that usually get an edge that way to try and win a football game.
You know, this is something that shocked me. Kirk Ferentz is one of the oldest head coaches in college football right now, and we've seen some head coaches hang on for years and years. Bill Snyder comes to mind, and some got out relatively young, like Bob Stoops, Urban Meyer. Is there a certain age at which a head coach has a tough time relating to some of these players he's trying to recruit, just because of the cultural divide between their generations?
No, I don't think so. You know, I mean, it's a really a real good question, a fair question, but Bill Snyder, we just mentioned, is one of the real classic examples, one of the best coaches that ever walked the sidelines in the history of our lifetime. I was fortunate to coach with him for a decade as an assistant at Iowa, but to still be successful and being able to relate and be able to communicate and be able to build relationships and build trust and build respect, I think if you can do that at any age, which I believe you can, everybody's got a different personality in coaching. And by the time you try and imitate somebody and try and be somebody else, young men know that and families know that. And they can see a phony and they can smell one out and they can sniff one out. So I think just being yourself and being as genuine and as honest as you possibly can be at any age. But I know one thing, if you don't have a good energy level, you're not going to last very long. And in all honesty, being a head coach is not for everyone. And lots of really fine assistant coaches never got that chance. And some did, and it just didn't work out at all, and because it's just not for everyone.
All right. Well, it's just been fun talking to you again, Dan. Dan McCarney, head coach at Iowa State for several years, assistant at Iowa for all those years, leading up to the Cy-Hawks series. I know you'll be watching at, 4 p.m. Eastern on Fox Sports 1 when you, from where you're at. Dan, thanks so much for joining us to talk about this great series.
It is a great series, man. Pleasure to be with you, and I hope it's a phenomenal weekend for the Hawkeyes and the Cyclones both.
All right, and we'll be back with more high school football right here on KSCJ.